And now for something completely different.
It's a Rich Fast World. Forget everything you've been told by others before. Get ready for the real deal. The full story. Real talk about money, markets, life. Now, it's The Real Investment Show with Lance Roberts. Presented by RIA Advisors.
And good morning and welcome to a very special edition of the Real Investment Show, because we've had massive technical failures over the weekend in our studio. So this is a web-only version just for y'all watching on YouTube today. And of course, enjoying our show online at realinvestmentadvice.com. Of course, we appreciate you. Make sure you're subscribed at our YouTube channel. That way we update you on a regular basis with new podcasts that are coming out. In fact, this week we've got a new podcast coming out with Tommy Thornton. Talking about the markets and cycles and all these type of things are going on. We've got some great interviews though that are coming up with Jim Bianco and a whole variety of others. So make sure you're subscribed at the website. Simply go by realinvestmentadvice.com, click on the YouTube tab, and just subscribe. You just put your email address in with YouTube, and then when we post a new video, update, whatever, comes directly to your inbox, keep you all up to date. And this is stuff, by the way, that you don't hear on the daily show of the Real Investment Show, right? This is bonus tracks that you get at our YouTube channel. So not only do you get our daily updates and radio show, etc., you also have these special interviews. All at the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. So a few things to go through today, right? We've got we are running right up into the end of the year, right? 2019 is the end of the year. We're going to talk a little bit today about decennial cycles, presidential cycles. We have an election next year. We're also going to talk a little bit today about these employment numbers. Huge employment number on Friday. That is just a massive employment number. Everybody's all excited about the job growth on Friday. But really, was it all that, right? So we'll talk a little bit about that today. How employment works and what it's telling us. And also talk just briefly today also about investing, right? And how it works and things you can actually do to have better returns over the long term. So we've got a few things to go through in the show today, and so we'll get into all that stuff. But, you know, kind of the interesting thing to really discuss here is bringing kind of this broad view back into some perspective. You know, we talk, you know, as investors, we tend to get wrapped up in the moment about what's happening within the markets, right? Markets are going up. We feel really great about it. And it's awesome, right? So every day is like a new high for the markets. It's good news. And it's great for our portfolios, right? Because we look at our portfolio values are going up. And it's very much like gambling in a lot of ways. You have the same exact type of release of the dopamine effect within the brain. We see green numbers on our screen and it makes us happy. And so we want more of that. And that's how gambling works. This is why people get addicted to gambling, right? Because they get addicted to that dopamine release of winning. Unfortunately, it also works in reverse. When we're losing, we can't stop gambling because we keep hoping to get that feeling back, right? And it's the same thing with what happens with investing, is that we get very used to these markets that go up over time. And look, markets go up about 85% of the time. And that's fine. It's that 15% of the time that wipes people out, right? And it's just that's the part we don't want to think about. It's the part we don't want to remember. And the one thing that you are noticing more and more now, we're 10 years into this bull market cycle. And I read this great article over the weekend talking about this 24-year-old guy. He is working hard. He works. He's a lineman in Chicago. So he's the guy out there that when the power goes out, he's the guy making sure you have electricity. Loves his job, right? Makes about a little over 100,000 a year, like 120,000 a year doing this job. Had no idea linemen paid that much, by the way. But they get paid very well, especially in Chicago. But he's saving that. He's working two side jobs. And his goal is to be a millionaire by 30. He's going to have $1 million saved up. He's currently got $200,000 in the bank. And with his investments the way they're going, and it's fantastic. He's going to have $1 million in the bank by the time he's 30. This is good. That's great, right? I mean, that just shows you the power of hard work and saving and discipline. He still lives at home with his parents. But the important thing here is, and that's really not the important part of the story. The important part of the story is here's a guy giving financial advice to others in this interview, talking about how to save and invest and do these type of things. And we see a lot of this right now. We see a lot of this. We see very young people giving advice to their millennial friends, saying this, oh, this is all you just got to do is put your money in the market. It's a fantastic. Okay, well, think about this for a moment. 10 years ago, when this bull market started, they were 14. So this is people that have no financial experience giving other people with no financial experience advice. And this is akin to what we saw at the peak of bull markets in the past, is getting stock tips from your barber, your local grocery checkout clerk, et cetera, saying, oh, you got to buy this stock. It's going up. It's great. We're all making money. This is what you see at market peaks, is people with no financial experience giving people with no experience advice. And this tends not to work out well. But this is also human nature in its very basic form, which is that we don't like pain, right? We don't want to remember the financial crisis. It was terrible. Lost half your money. People lost their houses. We don't want to remember what happened in 2008. We don't want to remember what happened in 2001 and 2. The human mind does not like pain, so we tend to forget it. If the human mind did not want to forget pain, women would have one child and that would be it, because it's a very painful experience. But you know, after a while we forget about pain. That's how the human body works. It's how our human mind works. It works the same thing in investing, and this is why we forget about the importance of managing risk. We forget because we forget about the pain of loss over time. And here we are 10 years into a bull market cycle, and we are now back to the point that we have forgotten about what happens during down cycles, and we forget about what happens during the entirety of the full market cycle. So this is something we're gonna touch on a little bit more here later in the show this morning about this full market cycle, where we are now and how to navigate that. But it's important to remember that as investors, we have to focus on managing the risk, because it's great to make money on the way up, but if we lose it all on the way back down, we haven't really done what we were supposed to do, which was to increase the value of our savings. So here in a few seconds, we're going to come back from the break, and we're going to get a little bit into talking about the employment number on Fridays. It was this phenomenal number. And we'll talk about exactly what it means. And of course, does it really change the dynamic? Does 1 month's number really change the outlook? And so we'll come back. We'll talk about this. Don't go away. More of the special edition of the online version only of the Real Investment Show coming up right after this.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available on iTunes.
Listen anyplace, anytime
at itunes.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with RIA Advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlock. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlock, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab. RIAAdvisors.com.
And welcome back to the Real Investment Show. It's our special online version only of the show today, just for y'all, just for you that are watching online right now, live, and of course, later on our podcast. Thank you for hanging out with us. Let's talk a little bit about that astonishing employment report on Friday. It was absolutely amazing, right? On Friday, the BLS reported the employment numbers for November, and it smashed expectations. Even it was 30,000 jobs higher than the highest expectation, over 260,000 jobs created in the month of November. Phenomenal, right? I mean, people are just apparently hiring people left and right. Well, not so fast, real quick here. First of all, that was the end of the GM strike. We had an auto workers strike back in October. All those workers came back onto the roll. So that was about 50, 60, 70,000 people right there when it was all said and done, that was affecting the outcome of the employment report on Friday. But nonetheless, it was a good report. It was exceptionally better than what we saw in the ADP report just earlier in the week, which was only 67,000 jobs. So there was this big divergence between the two. But first of all, with a couple of things here. ADP is actually reporting what they have on the rolls. Now remember, ADP is a company that actually manages payroll. So they actually look at how many people were hired and how many people were terminated from their actual data. The BLS is a survey taken on the phone. I call up Brent Clant and I say, Brent, are you working? He says, yeah, of course I'm working. Well, who's not working today, right? Everybody's working. So we ask a series of questions, and this is a survey that's done once a month. Because of the differential in Thanksgiving being the actual last possible date in the month of November, it skews the numbers on the survey. So the number of the BLS report tends to play catch-up with the ADP report, which is more actual data. So very likely we're going to see a payback in the employment numbers in December and in January as we start to get this number kind of realigned with what's actually going on in the economy. Now, there's a couple of big things that happen in January. We have big seasonal adjustments in every January to account for all of the seasonal workers that are occurring right now in November, December. Yes, lots of people are getting hired right now for seasonal work. They're working retail jobs, those type of things on a temporary basis, and those will all get terminated after the holidays. So we have these big seasonal adjustment numbers that really kind of skew the employment data over the course of the next couple of months. But look, here's the important thing. Employment data is more important. It's a terrible indicator to start with. It's very lagging. It's looking backward over a month. The second thing is that employment data is the most subject to revision in the future. So a year from now and 3 years from now, when we revise all the economic data, employment is the one that has some of the biggest revisions to it because it's a guess. I mean, you're surveying 30,000 people in the economy and extrapolating that across 330 million people. It's just it's very much what they call a wild ass guess about how many people are actually working. But the important thing is that these numbers trend. And what's more important than the number itself is, did the number on Friday change the trend of the data? Now, that was another thing. There's actually two employment surveys. There's the official BLS report that we talk about on the news. And there's the household survey, which actually is the survey of them calling houses before all the seasonal adjustments. There was a massive divergence between those two reports in and of themselves. Now, why is the household survey important? Well, that's the actual numbers that they were getting from the survey. Then they do the seasonal adjustments called the birth-death adjustment for what they assume to be new businesses getting formed and businesses closing. That's always a positive number, despite the fact that small businesses have basically been declining over the course of the last decade. So that's boosted employment by about 7 million people. The other side of this is that also these other adjustments for seasonal tendencies, et cetera, and the goal of these seasonal adjustments is to simply smooth the data because employment's very lumpy. It's very because of seasonal issues like Christmas hiring, et cetera. These numbers tend to be very lumpy. So they use these seasonal adjustments to try to smooth things out to give you a kind of a better look at the overall trend of the employment data. Well, one of the things that we do in our shop is to actually just look at the 12-month moving average, right? If I want to smooth data, I simply use a moving average. And I say, okay, let's take a look. Since we look at employment on a year-over-year basis, let's take a 12-month average of the non-seasonally adjusted household survey. So let's actually take the data and let's smooth it with a 12-month moving average, and let's compare that to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, all manipulated and adjusted and tweaked and massaged with seasonal adjustments. You know, what does it look like? Well, these are the two compared. And what you find out here is that there's really not much of a difference between the 12-month moving average and all these seasonal adjustments that the Bureau of Labor Statistics goes into to maturate their data. But what you do notice, and this is the most important thing, is that the BLS report, which is the blue line, tends to deviate to the upside during the growth in the economy. In other words, the BLS is saying there's more jobs being created than what just the simple 12-month moving average of the household survey says. But what you'll notice is that during the recession, the BLS report catches up with the 12-month moving average of the household survey. This is where all this excess revision starts coming out of the markets. All this overestimation of how many jobs were created leaves, and the household survey comes back into focus because this is the actual data. And again, not surprisingly here, we once again see this deviation between the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the actual household survey 12-month average. Here's the other important part of this. So we had this really strong report on Friday. It didn't change the overall trend of the numbers. The trend of employment is still moving lower. It's been moving lower really since about 2016. Employment trends have been weakening. And yes, it was a great number last Friday, but it didn't change the overall negative trend of employment in the economy right now. And this is something that is normal. This is what you saw. This type of topping and kind of this pattern of weakening employment growth, same thing that you saw back in the late 90s. You saw it back in the late 80s here. You saw it back in the late 70s and 60s. This is typical of what you see within an economic cycle. The next goal here will be that employment from the BLS report will begin to catch up with this 12-month moving average of the household survey. And this is suggesting that over the next year, employment is likely to weaken. Now, this shouldn't be surprising either, talking about weakening employment. Weakening employment is part of the cycle. But here, let's talk about something important when it comes to employment and businesses. Corporations, businesses, they are the last to hire and the last to fire. And so we talk about record low jobless claims. Jobless claims are at record lows. Absolutely they are. Because companies aren't firing people. The only way that you can claim jobless claims is you can quit your job, but you can't claim jobless claims if you quit. You can only get jobless claims if you are fired or laid off by a company. If companies are already running at what they feel is full employment, they're not hiring any more people, but they're also not firing or laying off anyone yet. So jobless claims will fall. This is what's called labor hoarding. I'm hoarding what labor I have. It doesn't mean I'm hiring. Low jobless claims does not mean I'm hiring people. Low jobless claims means I'm not firing people. So what's important here is how CEOs view the economy as a whole. Am I hiring people because I foresee lots of incoming growth? Do I see more demand for my products or services? So am I hiring people? Or are companies saying, hey, look, you know, business is okay. I've got all the employees I need. I'm not going to fire or lay anybody off because hiring employees is very expensive. I've got to train them. I've got to source them. I've got to pay them. I've got to train them. And if I've used some type of recruiting agency to help hire talent, I've got to pay the recruiting agency. So hiring an employee is very expensive. So once I get a good employee, I certainly don't want to let him go. I'm going to try to hang on to my employees as long as possible until I'm just absolutely forced to start firing people. That's why companies last to hire, because they're not going to commit the resources until they're sure the economy is recovering after a recession. They're last to fire. They want to make sure that if I go let go of my employees, so I've spent a lot of time and money and effort training, and by the way, who will be picked up by my competitor down the road, before I fire that guy, I want to make darn sure that I'm in an economic recession, last to fire. So if we take a look at what drives the hiring and firing decisions of businesses, is take a look at CEO confidence. This is CEO confidence as compared to the Bureau of Labor Statistics employment numbers, and that is what we were just talking about on Friday. If you look at CEO confidence, it's now down at lows that we very rarely see and only see prior to the onset of a recession. Also notice that employment plays catch up with CEO confidence. CEO confidence is at levels saying, hey, look, I'm really not optimistic about the outlook for the economy over the next couple of years. I'm starting to get much more concerned. Now, CEO confidence is important to pay attention to, because CEOs are the ones looking at their bottom line. They're looking at their sales. They're looking at what the demand is for their products. They're looking at what the economic environment is. They're looking at costs. They're looking at hard data about their business. They are not confident right now about what they're seeing. The next decision is I'm not firing my employees just yet because I want to make darn sure that the things aren't going to suddenly get better. What I want to make sure here is is that when I start firing, that I'm doing it at the right time. Employment plays catch up with CEO confidence in every previous condition going back to the 1970s. Pay attention to this data. It's very important. All right, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the collision. 2020, a very interesting year. In just a few days, we're going to close out the second decade of the 21st century. We'll talk about what that means for next year. And also, we have an election next year. How does this all come together? We have the collision of these two cycles occurring. We'll come back, talk about that right after the break. Don't go away.
Real Investment Show podcasts are now available from Stitcher Smart Radio. Listen anyplace, anytime at Stitcher.com.
2019 is drawing to a close. Get ready for a successful 2020 with our RIA advisor's free financial planning tool, MyBlocks. It's our online modular manager for your money and your life. Does your vision of retirement match up to reality? MyBlocks can help to determine how much you'll need and how you can achieve. What worries you about your money? Create your own personal financial vision for the next decade with MyBlocks, our free tool at RIAAdvisors.com. Click on the client portal tab, RIAAdvisors.com.
Can't catch the whole show now?
Listen to our podcast later
at RealInvestmentAdvice.com.
Science Roberts, and this, of course, the very special edition of the Real Investment Show right here on our radio show. Get by the website, get our YouTube videos, updates. Also, our latest newsletter is out from this weekend talking about this very thing, the collision of the presidential and decennial cycles, and that's occurring in 2020. In 2020, we have a presidential election, and that has an impact on markets. Also, we talk a little bit about the decennial cycle. 2020 is the beginning of the next decennial cycle. So this is the end of this decennial cycle. And then 2021 will start the next decennial cycle. So how do these two interlay with each other is very interesting, because when we take a look at the presidential cycle, now this data shows you all the presidents going back to 1833 with Andrew Jackson, and goes through the 4 years of the S&P 500 and what happened during each president during their four-year cycle. Now, of course, a president can be elected for two terms, so through that, there'd be an 8-year cycle in that point for each one of those, but I've broken each down into each of the 4-year cycles. Now, here's what's interesting about this. If you take a look at, presidents, whether they're Democratic or Republican, it really doesn't matter. But the markets really kind of follow their own pattern. And while there's a lot of, angst about recessions and about who's president, who's not, if Trump gets reelected, that's one thing. If Nancy Pelosi or somebody else, disrupts the whole election process and we get a Democrat elected, that's, another view about what's going to happen in the markets. But really what it turns out after all of this data over the last, 150 years, what we find out is that the fourth year of a presidential cycle, right, the fourth year of the term, this is wrapping it up, it would be 2020, tends to be a winning year about three quarters of the time, right? So that's not too bad, right? So 75% of the time, the markets have an up year. Here's another interesting little tidbit. Since basically 1945, going back to Franklin Roosevelt, there has only been two down years in the fourth year of the presidential cycle. Guess what 2 years those were? 2000, 2008. It's keep a watch on this, because again, it doesn't mean that you can't ever have a down year. Yes, the odds are that the presidential election year will be positive for the markets, because look, this is people excited about the president coming up, potential new policies. Trump's going to be running on something, like a new tax cut for households. It's very optimistic for the market. So markets tend to be optimistic going into the election. Then after the election, they find out who gets elected and what the policies are actually going to be. Well, that tends to be kind of disappointing. And so first years of election cycles tend to be much worse. So 2021 suggests that there's about an even break-even chance of a positive or negative year. The average return in the fourth year is about 9.8% versus 2021, which is only about 5% on average, because you have a lot of lost years in the first year. So the odds are, and then when looking just at the presidential cycle says that 2020 should actually be a fairly good year. That's great news, right? Stay invested. Hold on a second. Because, again, we are now starting to run into the 10th year of a decennial cycle. And what the 10th year of the cycle says is that market returns tend to be very low, about 1.91% on average. And out of all the decennial cycles going back to 1833, 11 have been up years, 7 have been down years. So this is actually much closer to a kind of a coin flip in 2020. And it's also the second worst performance year of the entire decennial decade. In fact, the 7th year tends to be the worst year, and the 10th year tends to be the second worst. And then what year is actually the third worst? Well, that's the first year of the decennial cycle, which would be 2021. That has an average return of about 2.1%. So now we start talking about the collision of these two cycles, potentially what it means for the markets. And when you take a look again at how these markets kind of break out over time, the best year tends to be the 5th year of the cycle. The 10th year tends to be the second worst. And combining this together, that combined with the first year of the decennial cycle, which is 2021, again, that's also the weakest of the presidential cycles as well, that over the course of the next 2 years, the next 24 months, there is the potential for disruption in the financial markets. Now, this doesn't mean that you're going to have a major bear market or crash. It could. We have before. 2008 is an example. Had a very, very negative year because of what happened with the financial crisis. We've been in a decade-long advance now without a recession. And more importantly, as we take a look at this data, we have to start thinking about how cycles actually work over time. Also take a look at what's happening with profits. Profits have been actually declining despite the fact that we had tax cuts in 2018. Everybody's very excited here. The estimates for 2019 have already fallen by more than $15. And we take a look at what's happening out to 2020. Just since April, estimates have fallen for the end of 2020 almost by $12 a share. And those are continuing to weaken as the outlook for the economy continues to weaken. But currently, even more so than that, profits as relative to GDP, actual economic growth. Now, here's the important thing. Stocks are not the economy. Stocks are a reflection of what is happening within the economy itself. So when stocks move too far, too fast away from the economy, eventually stocks will play catch up with where economic growth actually is, because the economy is what we're doing, right? That's 70% consumption, that's buying stuff, that's shopping, that's fixing cars, buying houses, all that. The company's earnings, the revenue that companies make, are derived from the economic activity. So stocks are a reflection of the underlying economy, not stocks don't make up the economy. And this is what tends to get believed when we have these deviations of markets over the over actual economic growth. But ultimately, stocks, earnings, profits, etc., will catch back up with the economy. And when you have these big deviations in price over the economy, they tend to lead exactly at the points where you have the dot-com bubble, financial crisis, central bank bubbles we've got going on now. But also, here's a look at earnings as compared to actual profits. Now, corporate profits are what are reported by all companies, private, public, small, business, large. This is the S&P 500 earnings, right? But these S&P 500 earnings, which are extremely deviated from global, from actual domestic profits, is about 40% of what's actually happening in the total profit margins of the entire country. So the rest of the country is telling you that the economy is not nearly as strong as what's happening in the S&P 500. So again, we're building up risk in the S&P 500 because we're overpaying for what's actually happening within the economy itself. Combine this now with the collision of these presidential and decennial cycles, which suggests that over the next 12 to 18 to 24 months, we could see some rather significant weakness in the market. This all begins to really kind of dovetail together here, that by paying too much in assets, and typically what happens during cycles, and again, we're very, very long in this particular first half of the cycle. So every market has two cycles, a full market cycle, bull and bear. Can't have one without the other. We're very long in this current bull market cycle. And when it ends, there's a lot of catch up that has to occur between prices, what people are paying, and what they're actually getting in terms of earnings. Valuations, as Warren Buffett says, price is what you pay, value is what you get. And that's the risk that investors are taking. So pay attention to your money here, because that's the important thing that we're looking at. Now, let's talk about the great cash hoard of 2019. This is one of kind of the big misnomers that are running around right now. It's like there's all this cash just sitting on the sidelines. And this is the chart that shows it, right? So this is the actual money market accounts of all different types as measured by the office of that manages this data. Office of Financial Research. And what you'll see here is there's been a sharp ramp up in money market assets over the last couple of years in particular. And this is what's got everybody all excited, right? There's all this cash that has to come back in the markets. Okay, let me clear something up for you right now. There is no such thing as cash on the sidelines. For every buyer, there's a seller. Think about the stock market as a football game. Every team has 11 players on the field. Now, they may have 50 players on the sidelines, but on the field at any time, there can only be 11 players. If I take one player out, I've got to put another player in. But there's always 11 players on each team on the field at any time. So 22 players max on the field at any one time. Stock market is exactly the same way. If I take money out of the market, in other words, if I've got money sitting in a money market account, I want to go buy a stock. Somebody has had to sell me that stock, so they no longer own that stock anymore. So the only differential is what changes the price, which is the supply and demand of buyers versus sellers. If there's a bigger demand of buyers, that drives prices up because sellers demand more in the price of the stock in order for them to sell it. They've got to be enticed to sell it. Same thing occurs during a decline. More sellers than buyers. Buyers step back and say, yeah, I'll buy it, but at much lower prices, this drives prices down. But the actual flow of money never changes because there's always a buyer for every seller. Importantly, right now, when we take a look at the equity money market ratio, we're near highs historically, which suggests that the household assets are as fully invested as just about you can imagine. And we see the same thing also in retail money market cash, extremely low. In other words, retail investors have very little cash sitting in their accounts. It's all either been invested in stocks or bonds. Same thing for mutual funds. Mutual funds have extremely low cash balances currently, as they have fully invested, right? They're chasing markets just like everybody else. So if that's the case, where is all this cash sitting at? Well, that's what's interesting here, because what's been fueling the markets over the last couple of years is foreign dollar denominated assets. These are called euro dollars. Euro dollars are foreign banks that have domestic branches that are storing capital in U.S. dollars. So money flows of foreign companies and businesses coming into the country, and that's sitting in U.S. dollar denominated assets. Why? Because, well, you got $17 trillion or so in negative yielding assets elsewhere in the world, and so money is chasing some of the highest yielding returns, which are in the United States. Money market funds are positive, 1.5%, 2%, depending on what kinds you buy. Treasuries, all those type of things, all providing a better yield than what investors can get overseas. So they're storing reserves. And in fact, if you take a look at this chart, now this is the commitment of traders report. This is positioning of euro dollars. So this doesn't represent exactly flows coming in. This is what people expect is going on. These are people betting on futures. But the tail here is very important, is that you've seen over the last couple of years, commensurate with this surge in money market deposits, this extremely strong long positioning in euro dollars. In other words, the money flows are directed to U.S. dollar denominated assets, not necessarily foreign assets. The big risk here for stock investors is that when this reverses, when money flows come out of the U.S. dollar to go back overseas, that's going to drag on U.S. dollar denominated assets, i.e. stocks, bonds, etc. Pay attention to this. This is important. And here, going back to what we talked about earlier in the show, which is that everything cycles. And we've got to remember that, again, when this money flow begins to revert back into another direction, it's going to weigh on U.S. markets. Now, often we think about this like, the market's up, you know, 50%, 100%, you know, from the lows. That's fantastic. If I'm up 100% from the lows, if I lose 50% of my money, I'm back to where I started. Now, people get lost in percentages because there's a lot of charts that flow around that show here's the bull market percentage, here's, you know, this little blip right here, this is the bear market percentage. When you actually take a look at what happens to dollars and look at things in changes of points, all of a sudden the bear markets become much more clear as to what happens with money over time. And what you see here is that for every bull market, the preceding bear market pretty much wipes out most everything you made during the advance. 2008 was a good example of this, of course. The markets were up nicely going into 2008. You gave it all back and more in 2008. You now have had the longest bull market on record, which suggests that when the next bear market comes along, you're going to have a relative decline of some or most of the current advance. So again, when those money flows reverse out of U.S. dollar denominated assets, that's going to begin to put pressure on stock prices. Once that begins to trigger panic and fear in the markets, these declines are going to be rather exceptional. So again, this is why it's important to manage risk. And we talk about managing risk. Using simple methods of managing portfolios over time can lead to much better returns by simply eliminating or avoiding some of the downside in the markets. This chart shows a simple back test using a 12-month moving average as an example. But there's lots of methods to manage risk. The goal is simply taking some action to manage the assets in your portfolio so that you can control the downside risk. There's lots of dynamics that are flowing through the markets right now. We've got the presidential election cycle that's coming up, a presidential election next year. Everybody's excited about that. Who's going to win? Who's going to lose? What's going to happen? Policies make a difference, right? Tax cuts, no tax cuts. Or if the Democrats get elected, will they repeal the corporate tax cut? Are they going to go after health care and medical expenses, et cetera? Those, you know, the things that a lot of the Democrats talk about, policy changes, paying for students, paying for college loans and these type of things all have an impact on the economy and the markets. If Trump gets reelected, different outlook or ongoing trade wars and issues can weigh on markets as well. So it's not necessarily an all clear sign over the next couple of years. And again, just remember, we're 10 years into a bull market here. We're 10 years into an economic cycle, longest economic and market cycles on record, bar none. And yes, we have a tremendous amount of central bank intervention that's going on now that's supporting asset prices and have got people chasing assets higher, way overpaying for the value, as I showed earlier. But that all has negative consequences. There's always a payback for that action. So again, pay attention to what's going on with your money. Most importantly, you know, stay up to date with what we're talking about here on the show, what we write about in our newsletter that we publish every week. Simply subscribe for free at the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. Also, click on the YouTube channel, subscribe there as well. We keep you updated with all of our podcasts, videos, updates, and more. You'll get it all there at realinvestmentadvice.com. And of course, the most important thing is simply just click on the Ask a Question button. Let me know what I can do to help. We're always happy to do that for you right here at realinvestmentadvice.com. Have a great day, and we'll see you on the next Real Investment Show. I'm your host, Lance Roberts.
It's a risk.